Hey, how's it going, y'all? It's Iffy here with Alonzo Andrea, and we just wanted to talk to y'all real quick about the Max Fun Drive.
Yep, it's Max Fun Drive time again, and you know, you guys listen to the shows on the network, you know, they all end that they're artist-owned, listener-supported, and this is the listener-supported part. Once a year, we come to the folks who enjoy these podcasts and offer you guys the opportunity and ask you for the privilege of us getting to be supported by you. And when you become a member of Max Fun, you are basically directly affecting the ability of the network to continue this show, to continue other shows that you listen to here, and of course, you know, the possibility of putting together new ones in the future. All that stuff takes money, and this is we try not to hammer it home too often, but once a year we kind of remind you, hey, we would like some of that money if you can offer it. If you can offer it to us. We know it's a terrible time to be alive in the world right now, and not everybody's personal economics can brook their support of things like podcasts. But you know, if you listen to these shows every week, if we bring some joy into your humdrum lives, as they say in Singing in the Rain, then now's a great time to show some support to us and to the other Max Fun shows in a very literal way.
We honestly didn't even have to prod him to make a Singing in the Rain reference. He just went and did it. I do like that everyone is not living in the same full Amazon cart every 3 days as one Mr. Iffy Wadaway is right now. But if there's a different monthly amount that's good for people, most people give $5 a month or $10 a month, some upgrade to 20 or 35 or whatever. So it's what works for you, and it means a lot to us. So if you want to contribute, you can go to MaximumFun.org/join.
Damn, well, they said all the important stuff, so I guess we'll get back to the podcast.
Careful, man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hey, how's everyone doing? It's time for another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Iffy Wadaway, and in the booth with me are my friends, and let me introduce you to all of them. One by one. First off, we have Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
Well, you know, Iffy, what is good, what has always been good and will always be good, is bacon. There was that moment there where everybody tried to get too cute about bacon and, like, you know, all the bacon-flavored condiments and the bacon magnets on your fridge and all of that stuff. It's like, everybody calm down. Just bacon's great. We don't need to make it a thing. The reason that I'm thinking of bacon today is because we've been building our pantry around here and buying from the restaurant wholesalers to, like, have large quantities of things. And we got a 15-pound package of bacon, not 15 one-pound packages of bacon, mind you. One 15-pound of bacon. And, you know, once you defrost it, you can't, like, use part of it and then freeze back the rest of it. You're committed at that point.
Oh, man.
So we have defrosted it, and so now Dave has been literally sweating over a hot stove for quite some time now, just frying bacon, and we're going to put that in the fridge and use it when we need it. But this whole house is just like being inside of a really bacon-themed diner, and it's great.
If he's like, don't threaten me with the good time.
I was like, maybe I need to pull up. Munch. Get ready.
I'll put some in the bucket that we have on the balcony and lower it down to you.
Yeah. Lower. It puts the bacon on its skin. Well, anytime you use a bucket to lower something, bucket, that's the first time.
Our frame of reference is more... We're more Swiss Family Robinson than Silence in the Lambs. You know,
Nightmare
you do
Before
you.
Christmas is right there. Just be Sally lowering her little bucket.
Exactly.
Ooh, okay.
Oh my God.
All right, Drea Clark, how about you? What's good?
I love our new show, Bucket Talk. What's good with me is funny that Alonzo already knows this because I have already discussed it. You guys, what's good with me is raw honey. And ooh. I say that not just because I started getting raw honey like a year or two ago, locally made, because I heard it was good for like dealing with allergies. The bees collect stuff that's in your area. I don't really know, whatever.
Yeah.
I drink tea. I put it in the tea. It's great. But as you know, anything skin related, I'm in. And so I've absolutely started slathering my face with raw honey as a mask. And it's the best mask ever. It's super moisturizing. It doesn't, it seems like it would, you know, when it gets on your fingers and you're like sticky, it is not like that. Like you get it a little wet. It slides around fine. It rinses off with water fine. It is so nice. I highly recommend it. Not the honey bear stuff. Then you're just rubbing sugar on your face. You need like proper raw honey. I will also add that when I last told Alonzo this, sorry, Alonzo, within an hour, I started getting targeted ads of raw honey.
You say it out loud.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So apologies to everybody who's like Amazon and Instagram is about to start giving them raw honey suggestions.
Dre, well, would you like a raw bacon mask by chance? Because I could hold some aside for you.
Our last friend is iHeartRadio producer and the producer of the Scrubs podcast, Fake Doctors, Real Friends, freelance writer. Our best friend, y'all know her, y'all love her, is Joelle Monique. Joelle, what's good?
Yay, hey! Oh my gosh, it's so good to be back. Drea was suggesting, I think it was you, Drea, who was suggesting Wild Nights with Emily.
Yes.
Yes. And I was like, well, here I have some time. Let me pop that in on the Hulu. I think is where it's available currently. Woo! That movie was so good. Right? I have watched it twice. I really love lesbians so much. I appreciate lesbians over 40. I appreciate lesbians who think they're keeping it a secret, but that's not what's happening. Every trope detail line of this movie is so good. Not just on the queer cinema front, but also just as a movie on a whole. It's really beautiful. I've been watching a lot of, I did that as a double feature with, what is the movie that also came out on Hulu about Shirley?
Shirley,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've been watching all of these like,
lesbian authoresses
reviews. Exactly. I mean, like these kind of new scope views of them that I'm really now fascinated by. So I watched Dickinson on Apple TV. More of this content would be great. Somebody do Toni Morrison next. Talk about her life. I'm ready.
Nice. You got to make sure you get some old school Fingersmith in there just to like.
Yeah, I'm about that.
Keep it all going. Yeah.
I don't know what Fingersmith is, Jaya, and it just sounds dirty.
That's the best part. I will send you Fingersmith, both as the book and as the series. Yeah.
If he was good.
Oh, dang it. If he was good.
Well, what's good with me is something that seems like it's only an iffy thing. But I think in the end, I might be able to get it. Might at least pique the interest of some of y'all a little bit. Joelle already heard me gushing about this, but Ghost of Tsushima is out now while you're listening to it. It's a new, it's been a highly anticipated samurai game that's been in development. It's by the same people who made the very popular game Infamous, the same studio. And it's this deep, cool, stylized samurai game. And I'm just going to say one thing. They have a mode called Kurosawa mode. Because it's very much inspired by the Akira Kurosawa movies. So there's a mode that you play in where it's like very like stylized in that way, and
they
like,
switch the aspect ratio. Yeah. They'll cut you like a black and white and or like more sepia toned feel. Yeah. And they slow things down, which is really cool. I pre-ordered the game like a couple days ago. I'm really looking forward to
so,
it.
Yeah. So I'm super hyped on it, and I love it. I'm a big fan of any time like games are like, all right, let's like make it more stylized and fun, because then I really get into it. I'm like, yeah, let me walk slower too, because I'm a dork. If you didn't know, I'm a huge, big old fat dork. Don't let the muscles fool you. I'm not, nor have ever been a jock. I was on the track team and left the track team my varsity year, much to the chagrin of my coach, to join comedy sports, an improv group. And that's when all the seeds I was laying at all the other school meets. People were like, Ify, there's these shot put girls asking about you. And I was like, it's too late. I'm of the arts now. I'm no longer
picked my side.
I'm no longer.
So wild.
Catch me under the salt.
The only sports I play is sports with a Z.
The kind with a 2-drink minimum.
Yeah. Catch me under the soft kiss of the ghost light behind the scenes, preparing to step to the stage betwixt my fingers, the scribe known as Shakespeare.
And you guys, did anyone have the...
I need an occupation and a location.
Did anyone have the money on Iffy being the first Macbeth reference of the day?
No, did not.
That's a whole other bingo card.
Well, on today's show, we're talking about the Old Guard. We're going to take a call from the Who Shot Line. And of course, we have our staff picks. But first, it's time for our news segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? All right. And the first thing we're talking about, buckle up, get your suits, get a tank of NOS in, because you know you're halfway there, because we've been racing on the streets of Los Angeles. Ludacris is teasing the possibility of Fast 9 going to space. We knew we were going to get there.
And we're running out of other options.
Look, we've driven on all the roads Earth gave us. We need to start roving.
We got submarines already.
Yeah.
Would you say that maybe where they're going, they don't need roads?
Oh, yeah. I would say that.
Come on, Drea.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the ongoing joke is that Fast and Furious would reach space. And according to a recent interview on SiriusXM's The Jess Cagle Show, this might actually happen. Ludacris was recently on the show when co-host Julia Cunningham began coming up with ideas about how the franchise could top itself next. She then threw out the suggestion that the Toretto gang could go to space, to which Ludacris replied, I'll say that you're very intuitive because you said something right, but I'm not going to give it away. Luda, is this important? Do you care?
So after this, what, time travel? I mean, what's left?
Truly. It's important to me that if he had a Ludacris impression locked and loaded.
you never know when Lauren's tuning in, trying to see. I was like, before these next SNL submissions, let me listen to some movie podcasts.
Yeah.
See, Drea, he was improvising.
Yes. Yeah.
Look, you can take the boy out the sports with the Z, but you can't take the sports with the Z out.
Oh, no. I've heard this idea that the next step for them will be in space for a while. And it's one of those that I want to think kind of started as just a joke amongst everyone because, of course. Mm-hmm. But that now the producers are like, you say joke, we say possibility.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they didn't watch X-Force launch a car into space to be outdone by real life, okay? They were like, we are prepared for this. I'm really excited to see what that will mean for them. Is it like just a quick burst out of the atmosphere to maybe do like a quick like Superman loop to another like space on the Earth? I would like to see them repeat Superman and have like try to reverse the rotation of the Earth in order to wind back
time.
Time
travel
I feel like we're reaching.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're reaching a fantasy point. And I'm not prepared to let this series go. It is perfect. It's everything you require of a summer movie. And they keep bringing me great cast members, so I want to go further.
All right. Zendaya and John David Washington filmed an entire movie in quarantine.
Why not?
Deadline reported that Euphoria creator Sam Levinson shot an entire movie with Zendaya and John David Washington last month during quarantine. The movie is called Malcolm and Marie and apparently has some echoes of Netflix's Marriage Story, which I love is the shorthand for people who don't know the long list of relationship dramas.
It's a drama about a couple. Marriage Story.
Yeah. The movie was shot between June 17th and July 2nd at the Caterpillar House in Carmel, California. The cast and crew reportedly followed strict COVID-19 safety protocols. Gang, is this important and do you care?
I mean, it's important in that I think the entire industry is dying for a roadmap of how to do this stuff. I've talked to people I know who work on crews and are below the line, and every time that something gets suggested, like, no, that's not going to work, that's not practical. The idea of, I mean, if they legitimately did quarantine their entire crew, great, but I think a lot of people are thinking someone's going to go sneak off and see their girlfriend, or someone's going to go out for a cigarette and blow the whole thing, you know. But if they did it, if they pulled it off, and they can now come to other productions with, here's how we did it, here's the roadmap, here's the protocols, then, you know, it's very important, because at the moment, nothing's happening.
I will say, on the like inside baseball part of it, I'm currently producing a couple panels for the Film Independent Forum in August that are specifically related to pre-production and production after COVID. And so tied to this, like, the unions all got together, DGA, SAG-AFTRA, Teamsters, and IATSE, and put together the guidelines called the Safe Way Forward, which is
right,
a lot of
the white paper. Yeah,
the white paper was the first one. The Safe Way Forward is like five times longer and has specifics. Gotcha. But the thing with this kind of production, I'm excited. I care, because there is that need. Like, we see so much of what's being developed right now. Like, I feel like all of us every day are getting news alerts of, like, someone's just been attached to this. And someone, you're like, what the hell are all these attaching? I don't know if anybody could shoot. So there is something like the optimism. But for me, as a producer, I look at it, I'm like, cool. The location that they're at, I couldn't afford a day at, let alone 3 weeks of shooting. And for any low-budget film to pay, a lot of those, like, you're only shooting for, let's say, 14 to 20 days on a low-budget feature. So the idea of bringing your crew out and quarantining them and paying them for an additional 14 days, like, you've just doubled. So there's a lot of things they did here that showed, oh, there's things that we can put in place in the optimism. And then there's other things of, oh, money, like everything, is going to be such a factor of who gets to do this stuff safely.
Well, I am, of course, avidly following, you know, Hallmark Christmas movie production Twitter, and there's a lot of stuff happening. There are a lot of things that are shooting in Vancouver, and apparently one of the things that's going on is that these crews are just going to roll from one movie into the next one, and so they quarantine them once, and then the idea is they just keep them around and you know, just plop in a new, you know, 90s sitcom leading lady and go from there, I guess, but...
Are we selling souls to the company store? Wait, when do they get a break?
Look, we not.
These are folks who probably haven't worked for like 3 months, so I'm sure they're like, great, I'll take it.
Production people would be pretty psyched to take a lot of things if they thought they were safe.
Sure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So James Gunn, director of Guardians of the Galaxy, also wrote the 2002 live-action Scooby-Doo movie that starred Sarah Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr., Matthew Lillard, and as Velma, Linda Cardellini. Recently, Twitter account at ViewfinderFCPod asked Gunn to, quote, please make our live-action lesbian Velma dreams come true, unquote, to which Gunn responded, I tried. In 2001, Velma was explicitly gay in my initial script, but the studio just kept watering it down and watering it down, becoming ambiguous, the version shot, then nothing, the released version, and finally having a boyfriend, the sequel. And then he followed that with four question marks. Is this important? Do you care?
F yeah, I care. I'm sorry, I can't remember if we're allowed to curse on here. I care so much. Listen, because there's certain characters that are like, the lesbians know. We're like, oh, they're one of ours and we love them and they can definitely hang out. And Velma has been one of those characters for like a long, like back in animated form, she had the lesbian following. And I have so many like queer lady friends who've dressed up for her as Halloween. And she's like an icon of like gay lesbian culture. And so to have somebody say, like, listen, I really, really tried 20 years ago, it's like, it's frustrating to look at the studio and be like, so we could have done had this, but it's also exciting to know that like, people behind the scenes have been trying to make it happen.
Yeah, look, I would much rather a, hey, I tried and they didn't go for it, than a retrofitted, oh, no, she was a lesbian all the time. We just didn't mention it or reference it in any way whatsoever, but you were just supposed to know.
I feel like, is it Peppermint Patty is the first?
Yeah, Peppermint Patty and Marcy.
Yes.
Like, let all of these women live their full lives, but also, man, I really detest the idea that, that the voice behind it, James Gunn in this instance, had already built it in. It wasn't a retrofitting of something. It was a removal. And that's so frustrating to me. It's Scooby-Doo was like a PG movie. So PG is like, yeah, people have boyfriends and girlfriends and that love. No. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not.
And it's not even like you
I
took
say
a.
This, yeah, I say that. Sorry. That sounded like I think that there's a level where people shouldn't have queer relationships, but I mean it more that That's nonsense. Like, their whole thing is they're like teens or whatever. Like, you're watching these teens solve mysteries. And I really hate that he could just say it got watered down level by level.
Yeah, and it's not even like he sort of took this character and just threw lesbian at it just to, right, like, you know, we're going to have fun with that. Like, yeah, you're right. It's like Joel was saying with Velma, like that comes baked in. That's part of the appeal of the character, part of the subtext of the character. But it's that thing where, you know, and you see it all the time, where suddenly just to have somebody who is queer not doing anything with it, not being in a relationship, not doing anything physical, that in and of itself is considered, you know, not family friendly. And the MPAA has certainly bolstered that over the years. You know, not the Warner Brothers was necessarily in the right, but I mean, I'm sure for your like kid franchise, they were probably trying to avoid a PG-13, which the MPAA probably would have slapped on them, because they gave a PG-13 to a movie called Big Eden, which is one of the like sweetest, most innocuous, old school kind of romantic fantasies. It's about a small town in a beautiful part of Montana that basically everybody conspires to get these two shy gay guys together. And like, it's so darling. And it got a PG-13 because, you know, like, ooh, boys who like boys. Ah.
Boo, hiss.
Hiss and
does
boo.
That is there a hiss level of is this important, do I care?
Is this sucks?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, we're gonna take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about the old guard. Hey, how's it going, y'all? You know, I said we'll be back and you're coming to us. And so since that'd be weird to some of y'all, I want to let you know it's time for, you know, us to talk about this Max Fun Drive again. I'm super hyped about it. Seems like y'all are too. Like, here's a comment from someone in the audience. Michael in El Dorado Hills said, "You guys are doing great. Don't be afraid to make us laugh. We need it." So, you know, you don't put a great quest in front of me. And don't think I'm gonna do something about it. I'm gonna try and make you laugh.
It's true. I like that quote because there have been conversations of, is what we're doing necessary or helpful or flippant right
or
now?
Or appropriate.
Yeah, and it means a lot to us. And tied to that is there's so many things you can be supporting. And we've been actively campaigning for a lot of those things to get the support. So we also know in terms of support, not everyone's in a financial position to be a Max Fund member. And we get it. We're down with that. If you are in a position to be able to invest in our show, we would appreciate it. It means a lot to us. I love doing this. I love seeing these fellas even through a screen. I love the funny friendships I've been making on Twitter and Facebook of people who chime in on stuff. And if you're
Drea, did you know that there was an American Psycho musical?
Wait, what? That's interesting, because I had this idea that American Psycho would make a great musical.
Oh, man.
Exactly. I love being schooled by every single person who listens to us. But yeah, we get it. There's a lot of things to support. It would mean a lot if we make your list.
And, you know, we, in addition to, of course, the warm glow that you'll get knowing that you are helping to underwrite all the awesome stuff that's happening at Max Fun, not just us, but the other shows that you love as well, we're throwing fun stuff your way. You know, starting at the $5 level, $5 a month, you get bonus content for every single show on the Max Fun Network, not just the ones that you are specifically supporting, all of them, everybody. We've all created bonus content, BOCO as the kids say, and you'll get all of that downloaded into your podcatcher. At 10 bucks a month, you get the gorgeous pin, and we hope you'll choose the Who Shot You pin, but there's a pin for every single show again
on
the Max Fun Network.
One of us.
That's right. Let the cool kids know just how cool you are with your Who Shot You pin. And then at 20 bucks, Christmas rolls around. Dave White needs to give me cool stocking stuffers. He knows I love a deck of playing cards, like weird collectible art, whatever kind of playing cards. He like searches for them all the time. So we got ourselves some Max Fun playing cards, some Max Fun dice, all going into a special, exclusive, unique game pack that you're only going to get if you become a $20 member. Each face card is unique and has hidden Max Fun images. I'm sure we're in there somewhere. And so, you know, this is not a thing you're going to stumble upon in the gift shop at the casino. You got to get it here during the Max Fun drive for your $20 membership. And then at $35, you get the very groovy Rocket Camp mug. I love those old school, are they metal? Are they porcelain? What's going on with this mug? I feel like I should be in a prison movie clanking it against the bars of the cell with the neat little with the Max Fun Rocket logo on it for your hot beverages, your cold beverages, your pencils, whatever you want to put in it.
Alonzo, I would screen it, that movie. Not you in a jail cell clanking the Max Fun Rocket logo mug is a movie that I would vote screen it.
It writes itself. And so, you know, in the meantime, we have lots of fun stuff coming up, not just the additional episodes, tell us about, this is your corner of the internet that I still don't understand, but
yes.
Walk us through it. I'm very excited about this.
Oh, excuse me one second, everyone, because now it's time to talk about www.twitch.com/ ifds, because your boy is ready for another watch along. We had so much fun talking the Avengers. Y'all were in there chatting with us, and just you wait, because my whole Twitch has upgraded since then. So I'm gonna have a feature chat going so that it pops up on the screen and we can see what you're saying while you're saying it. It's gonna be a good time, okay? It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be great. I'm just you wait. It's gonna be a good time. But we're watching The Apple none other than April Wolf. And that's gonna be on July 25th at 2 p.m. Pacific time. That is July 25th. At 2 p.m. Pacific time. So make sure you're locked in, you're loaded, because this is going to be a good one.
This is a movie that you'll want to see our faces. You'll want to see Iffy's face watching The Apple.
Yes.
That's what I'm getting at.
I've been told not to watch it.
We don't want you to even look up the synopsis. Nothing. Okay.
I'm just the Apple virgin that we need you to be.
Yeah, yes. Don't worry, I will. I'm going to go in blind and ready to spend some time with all of y'all. We truly appreciate y'all and everything y'all are doing. So, you know, whether you can or can't, I think at the very least, thank you so much for listening. We're going to get back to the show. Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Joelle Monique,
Alonzo Duralde.
And today, we're talking about The Old Guard. Drea, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
I will not mind at all. So, I'm not going to get any of the character names right, even.
Oh,
so
come on. If you're not going to say Andromache of Scythia, what's the point?
Such a show-off. Such a show-off. So, The Old Guard is about this band of well-intentioned mercenaries who also happen to be immortal. And they are led by one Charlize Theron, or Andy, because I will also call her by her nickname and not that full nonsense, who has existed for millennia, for whomever knows how long. And then three other dudes, including my favorite couple of movie love forever now. And when it begins, or towards the beginning, we find a new person assuming this weird realm of immortality, whatever, like, role of immortality, played by Kiki Layne, and she is an American Marine, and so they have to kind of unite with her, and then they are being tracked and hunted by Chiwetel Ejiofor, who is working on behalf of Dudley from Harry Potter, who wants to capture them and take their immortal essence for quote-unquote science purposes, but really to make some big pharma bucks. And so they have to either, you know, keep running or face him down. And I bet you guys guess which ones they choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. I'm going to kick this off with, so, you know, it was funny because we talked about this last week and Drea was quick to, when I was talking about the poster comparison, and was first like, it's like, you know, there's less women here. And you're like, don't worry. This is a lady director. She's going to hold it. And not to mention, this director probably directed one of the most influential films of my childhood, which is, you know, Joelle's shaking her head because she knows, Love and Basketball. So much That's so right. that one of my school crushes, we played a game of basketball to see if she'll be my girlfriend.
No, shut up. You played for her heart?
Yeah, I played for her heart. I will say this the woman I was playing is now lesbian. So, you know, I really was trying to defy all
odds.
That
sounds odds. Right.
Yeah.
Nope, that sounds just about right.
You are not going to beat her at basketball. Even if your sports have a Z on them.
Yeah. But then I, you know, of course, obviously I went to the IMDb and every time we do a non-white director who I'm like, oh yeah, they did that big movie. What happened since then? I look at their IMDb and get annoyed because I'm like, after something like Love and Basketball and then looking at her career since then, and she's, you know, she's done film, but it feels like every time it just feels like insert, you know, white director with friends here and they're just doing high budget movies for the rest of their career, or everyone, you know, because I never want to be like, oh, make it seem like she had a bad career, because she didn't, but it's just like, it just seems like
and also she's a woman director, which we also talk about all the time. We're like, you know, you can be the toast of Sundance and a woman, and if you're lucky, we'll throw some HBO episodic at you, you know.
Yeah so
she's the director. Gina Prince Bythewood is, she also did Beyond the Lights, like, yes. So many of her films are films that, like, I've never not adored something that she's made, and they're also so different, and yet I could do entire doctoral thesis about, mm-hmm. like, the commonality between Love and Basketball, Beyond the Lights, and The Old Guard, the idea of women, ambition. Like, there's just so much in there that she does, and I do. It's very frustrating to not think that her talent hasn't been fostered and exposed in a good way as much as it should. On the other hand, in addition to it be very difficult for female directors specifically to get, like, their second projects underway or big studio projects underway, it's also really hard to come out of boxes in terms of, oh, you make love stories with sports backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, you make black family dramas. Right. And the range that she showed and the ability to navigate different genres while retaining a storytelling style that is so her and so exclusively benefits from her perspective is really impressive. And I think The Old Guard is such a... we're lucky to see all of those things at play, because it had one. It also, so this is a movie that I think every one of us would have thrilled to have seen on a big screen and would have seen. Like, this is a big movie, right? Like, this is an action movie. But I realized in watching it on my laptop with my face real close, because that's how I replicate having a big screen, that I got to do what I've always wanted to do in action films, which is, 10-second rewind. How did she just kick that guy in the face? Because there were several times that there's these beautiful action sequences that I would like to revisit, just because even in me watching, like, the idea that this band of mercenaries has been fighting together for literally centuries, and how it has honed their fighting style and how they move in this, like, symbiotic, wordless, it's beautifully done. But also, I could just get, I'm sure if I watched, like, when you analyze, like old Jet, like, I was going to say Jet Li. Oh, sure. Analyze whomever you want. But, like, if you look at, like, Bruce Lee's stuff of, ooh, how did they do this? I just feel like each of the fighters was given a different fighting style. And there's five people in this team, two women, three men, and each of them has a different background they're bringing, and their stories are all evolved in smart, meaningful ways. And I think that as much as I wish that Gina could have had a million more shots, man, she really does well with the shots she gets.
Yeah. And you know, when you look at the diversity of the material here, obviously a lot of that comes from the comic book that she's adapting that Greg Rucka wrote, and he did the screenplay as well. But, you know, it is fascinating that we finally get a superhero movie that is directed by a black woman. We get a black woman principal character. We get a queer couple who have powers and are integral to the plot. You know, we get this stuff that somehow in the 20 years since the first X-Men came out, which is today, by the way, that anniversary.
Wow.
That no one seems to have bothered to get around to or figure out how to wedge in to their, you know, like team-up movie with 20,000 people in it. So, you know.
Despite the fact that most of those characters, especially if we look at X-Men, are stand-ins for, like, otherness. Absolutely. Like, for queerness and for blackness. And it's like, very frustrating as somebody who likes these things, who's aware that these things are readily accessible in the comics, who knows for a fact that there are like a bunch of fans who have been writing for years their own fan fiction so that they could like have these things next to canonical, if not, you know, verified in canon. And what I like really applaud Greg Rucka for in his adaptation of his own work is if you look at the comic book pages for this comic, it's like as much as this is a story about valuing life, there doesn't seem to be a lot of value that the characters hold for the people they fight against in the comic book, right? So that scene in the back of the truck, which you've probably seen already on Twitter, it's the love speech, which I'll leave the love speech for you. But there's in the show, like when they come out, like all of those guys are alive, right? Like they probably could have found a way to murk those guys and been like very violent. But it's clear that they take life only when they absolutely have to. Only when it's like, it's us or you're threatening innocent people. Other than that, they're like, they do everything they can to just like, I want to say even out the situation. Mm-hmm. What are the words I'm looking for? Make it nonviolent.
Yeah. They respect the notion of life and that for everybody else on Earth, it's a much shorter proposition.
Okay. Totally. And I think that there's like, what struck me in my third viewing of this movie was the idea of like, having an action movie that values life is so rare, and it's one of the few action movies you can leave being like, I don't want to live my life better.
Yeah.
Like, and what feels like, and if in a society that's frequently talking about restorative justice and what does it mean to live as a just human being, and then we're sort of starting to have these like really big conversations about what we've been doing, I think this film ends in like with a really strong note of like what it means to have like restorative justice within your own like friend family circles.
Yeah.
And I found that to be really beautiful and haunting.
I want to talk about the great gay couple in this movie and the scene. One of the best, I think, romantic monologues of he's not my boyfriend. I think no matter what your sexual orientation, no matter who you love, how you love them, if that didn't touch you, you just don't have a heart. That was one of the best. And I think I was just talking about it earlier, where I feel like scenes like that, when even in movies where they allow, like, if it's not a explicitly queer movie, when they allow like a queer person to like come out with love, that you never get like the kiss that comes after it. Like it always seems like we want to show it, we want to say it's in here, but we're so afraid to show the kissing. And so like for it to be in this like blockbuster action movie, this great monologue, and then end with a kiss, and almost seem like the guards are even taken aback.
Well, yeah, I mean it's a great moment, and of course, you know, anything that makes homophobes look like assholes is always a big plus in my book for sure. But yeah, no, it's a great piece of inclusion. And it also sort of like, I think it puts a point on like, you know, it's kind of throwing it back at the person saying, it's like, well, what are you saying exactly?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
We've spent centuries together. I would die and have died for this person and vice versa. And you're just going to sit there and go, so your boyfriend?
Yes.
You know,
I totally agree. I think that the setup of this monologue is that these two men are handcuffed. They are in the back of some sort of military vehicle. They're surrounded by men in like pseudo military garb in this very masculine posturing. And one of them is like, one of the handcuff guys is like, I want to check on him. And one of the military guys is like, oh, what? Was it your boyfriend? Which is such a baseline taunt of any kind of. And to me, it was more than it just being this beautiful declaration of love and connection between them. It was also the contextualizing, which Alonzo was also alluding to, the idea that that you know, his first response to that is like, you're an infant, which isn't just said because this was a man who was born probably in 1100 during the Crusades, but also because that's an infantile response to people showing affection.
Yeah.
And for men showing affection, especially the idea of oh, you can never just be sensitive and loving with your male friends. It has to be like, oh, no homo, or whatever dumb posturing.
Punching in the shoulders.
Yeah, and so having that scene, right, having that scene take place in literally a locked-in space surrounded by the trappings of, like, barriers of armor of masculinity, it meant so much more. And then I thought it transcended beyond that because there's another man in their group played by Matea Schoenaert, whom I've loved since Rust and Bone, and I think is a really interesting performer. And his character is as loving of them. Do you know what I mean? There's an embracing quality to all of them. There is, and there's this idea of like, oh, are you wondering how men act? Because these three have been men for 1,000 years. Like, that's how men act.
Yeah.
Considerate and loving and respectful and all
taking orders from a badass bitch. Totally. Totally. I just want to say really quick, Marwan Kenzari is the actor who gives that speech. And if he is not the heartthrob of this decade, I don't know what we're on. Oh my gosh. He's so yummy. He plays Malik in The Mummy. He's also Jafar in Aladdin, where he clearly hits peak hotness.
Don't say that. You don't know where he's going.
Give us more. He has more hotness to top himself.
Yeah. And this character is queer and Muslim, I think, is also not to be sneezed at.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. Everything about this movie was hitting. But also, it's so funny. We were talking about this before. Because, like, you know, we're saying, you know, Kiki Layne, who was, you know, the new immortal in this, and she was great. And I was like, who is this, like, new person? And it was two of my biggest misses that, and the reason I haven't seen her yet, because I've missed If Beale Street Can Talk and Native Son. So those are two of my misses where I'm like, I need to, you know, get on that.
She's shown such great range. Like, when you watch Beale Street Could Talk, I wanted to combine it with Sing Street. If Beale Street Could Talk, when you see Kiki Layne in that, she's so, like, ethereal, beautiful. Like, she's just this beacon of what we think of as, like, Western femininity, and like, so she's strong. And then you see her in this, she's a Marine, and you meet her and she's in action, and like, literally, she's like just a decisive leader and a physical actor. And I just was like, I just love seeing that kind of range in actors. I was so happy again, talking about like, who else is going to be spreading the net and thinking of like, oh, I have this action thing I want. I would like that. I bet that woman from If Beale Street Could Talk could knock this out of the park.
Also, just to the light note on that Marine scene with like the biggest cameo of someone who just took me so out the movie because I've been thirsting over this person real quick, which is Mede. I was like, you are so supremely gorgeous in this army outfit. Like you just stand out in the scene where you're like, really, this is the Marine. Like, I was like,
this is the woman with the shaved head.
She's the woman with the shaved head.
She was gorgeous,
pretty famous dancer. So like when I saw her, it just took me. I was like, I know that face.
Yeah, she didn't take me out, but I definitely was like, this is the most attractive Marine.
Where are around. These Marines? Come around.
Well, I feel like now it's time for us to give our final review of The Old Guard. So, would you screen it, stream it, or skip it?
Screen it.
If I could screen it, yeah. Sorry.
No.
Yes, if I could screen it, I would definitely do that. I would love to see this movie with an audience and just see what that experience is like. I demand a sequel. If they don't give me a sequel, I'll be very upset. It's a really fun movie.
Mm. Yeah. I'm also a screen it. And it's, speaking of the sequel, it sets up 3 or 4 clear narrative threads for the sequel, but without making this feel like one of those movies that you're like, oh, they set up a really great movie. I wish this had also been good. This one stands well on its own and makes me very excited and hopeful that they will make more. I'm a screen it.
Yeah, agreed. Screened it. And I think this is in the way that there are, you know, Breaking Bad, a couple of pilots that you show to writers, be like, this is how you write a pilot. I think this is how you write a tentpole, because they do set up an expansion of the world and an exploration of what happens next with these characters, the old ones, the new ones, all that stuff. But you're right. It doesn't, at the same time, does it not at the expense of making this movie feel incomplete. This is in and of itself its own thing, but it definitely whets your appetite to see where else they'll take it.
Look, as someone who saw this with Dolby surround sound in front of a 75 inch, you know, 4K TV. I got to tell you, the only way you want to see this is if you screen this thing. But since you can't stream it on your phone and look really close like Drea did. That's, you know.
I can watch it on my phone. I'm not a total heathen.
Put on the VR goggles and just get right up in there.
But yeah, no, I love this movie. This movie is my jam. There's nothing I like more than seeing strong women kick ass, and it's bonus points when it's my bae, Charlize Theron. I just gotta say, you know, I knew me and Charlize were going forever. When I knew she was rolling around in dirt between takes for Fury Road, I was like, yep. Yep, that's the one. okay, let's keep this thing rolling. And now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, could you just play that call?
Hi, guys. My name is Caitlin, and I've been showing my grandpa some of my favorite movies since we're sheltering in place together. I just showed him Beetlejuice for the first time, and he loved it, especially the makeup. So I was wondering, what are some of your favorite movie makeups? Mine, for instance, happens to be Freddy Krueger's from Nightmare on Elm Street, since that was one of the first horror movies my mom showed me. Can't wait to hear you guys' answer, and I hope you guys are staying safe and having a lovely day. Bye.
What a great question. That's a great question, and what a nice way to spend your quarantine.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I love that you said Freddy Krueger, because I definitely was obsessed with all of those movies from, like, in the sort of 12 and 13 ages. My preteen junior high years was obsessed with it. And Freddy Krueger has such a distinctive and disgusting look. And there's something about grossness and that age, which is real appealing.
Oh, yeah.
And right? And so I remember on a little younger, but Sloth from the Goonies and his weird shaped head and the eye. And like, it's humanoid. Like, it's just because when you're... Mine was like Freddy Krueger. I'm like, yeah, he's wearing makeup. But Sloth, I was like, oh, I don't feel good about, what if they found someone that looks like that? Like,
yeah.
It was a very upsetting, very formative makeup for me.
Mm.
I'm not a big horror guy, so I immediately sort of thought of things that were a little more kind of character-based but still genre, like Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn and Death Becomes Her, I think, go through a lot of weird permutations of themselves, both in terms of age and weight, and then just like when the plot kicks in, you know, the inhuman things that happen to their bodies. The one that I think is really great in a movie that did not get a lot of love, but I carry a torch for, Richard Kelly's film The Box. Frank Langella plays this supporting character, and he's like missing part of his face. And it was sort of the first movie I'd ever seen where I guess they were putting like green makeup on it and then just making it disappear, because it's not like they're adding to, they're taking away. Like, there's just like, there's like a part of his face is just gone, you know. And I'm assuming that it was sort of an early effort to like use green screen to sort of like just diminish the existence of someone's cheek or something, but it's very unsettling and really well done.
That was such a good and random and specific, thank you for lonzoing that was awesome.
You're welcome.
Y'all know I'm a fantasy girl myself, love the fairy tales and the fairy tale creatures, so I have two off the top of my head. Happily Ever After, Ever After
has this like final Cinderella reveal where she's just slathered in glitter with giant wings. Listen, son, I was like somewhere between 9 and 12 when this movie came out, and I was like, that is it. That's the red carpet look. Glitter all over your face is where it's at. Beautiful. And to this day, I will just be like, oh, what a princess. Like, lovely. And then pretty much every look for Pan's Labyrinth, which is, you know, a combination of makeup and sculpts. So I didn't know how technical we wanted to be. But the Fawn specifically is just so beautiful and haunting and weird and like looks like he's made of wood. It's so cool. So I really like
this. Her example, like Freddy Krueger has more than just like basic. There's weird drippy prosthetic stuff in there.
Oh, yeah. Like Alonzo, I'm not a fan of the horror, but if I'm talking about all time, something that I'll never forget forever. I'm sorry, I'm looking at it now. It's the most gruesome thing. For some reason, kids were looking at this, but Dorian Tyrell from The Mask, when he puts it on, and he's that big buff, and it's and someone pointed this out, and I don't know why it took me to be 32 before figuring this out, but yeah, that's another actor. Someone pointed it out, and it was a weird aha moment for us. Oh yeah, that is the same.
That one was I'll say on like a pathway to the horror front, Tim Burton has characters that always fulfill this, like the freaking penguin. Danny DeVito's penguin in Batman Returns is such a disgusting makeup, and it's like this combination of, it's just visceral, right? He's got that nose and the color, and there's always like the black stuff spilling out of his face, the flipper hands.
It's very gooey.
It's so gooey. I can smell him. And then, like, I love Edward Scissorhands' design because it is, you're like, it's that fantasy thing, right? Of like, oh, this is this boy who was like raised inside and never saw light. So he's very pale, and he has little cuts like of different lengths all over his face because of said scissor hands.
Right.
But I think moving into like a horror-ish, the Brundlefly designs from The Fly.
I was just about to open the David Cronenberg wing here, because there's, you know, Videodrome, all kinds of movies that use a lot of really bizarre prosthetics. But I'll tell you a very subtle Cronenberg moment that's always stayed with me in the subject of movie makeup. There's a scene in Dead Ringers where Genevieve Bujold plays a movie actress, and she's having this entire conversation while she's in the makeup chair, and she is in profile to camera, and the side that's facing the camera is just her face looking beautiful. And then at some point the conversation ends, and the makeup artist has been doing her other side of the face, the one that you can't see that's away from the camera. At some point the conversation ends and she turns in her chair, and the other half of her face looks like she's just had somebody's beaten the crap out of her, like these really realistic like welts and black eye and cuts and things, and it was just a moment in a movie that is generally disturbing. That moment particularly just kind of stayed with me. It's like, ah, like that's a thing that makeup artists do, you know.
They're talented.
But as a reminder, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY 803-1664. And now it is time for staff picks. It can be any movie at all. Joelle, why don't you start?
Oh shit. Sorry. Like a movie you should be. Oh, perfect. I'm gonna steal it from another conversation. Listen. Guys, I don't know what you guys have been doing during your quarantine. I had to get out of the house, but I had to stay safe because immune system not working 100%. So my friends were like, well, let's go to the drive-in. And I was like, that's a bomb idea. So we saw a double feature of Jaws and Tremors. It was my first time seeing Tremors. No one hate me. I really don't like that movie. I'm trying to see what you see. I wasn't here for it. Jaws, on the other hand, is the movie of the hour. Let me tell you why. A pandemic of shark attacks is happening, and the mayor is like, yo, we gotta keep the beach open because we gotta keep people, like, this is our money season. And people are like, but people could die. They're like, we'll just take care of it on the low. Like, don't even worry, we'll have somebody shoot it out, and it'll be solved in a second. And what it really takes is, like, three brave dudes on a boat just being like, everyone stay inside until we kill this shark. And it really resonated with me, like, we have to stay inside until we kill this virus. Jaws is, it's it's really just a preemptive look at what our world is like under coronavirus. It is shockingly weird to watch the mayor just bumble his way through every mistake. And you're like, everyone's going to die if you do this. It was like, it was a very visceral experience. I've seen the movie twice. I saw it once on a beach. And then now in the drive-in. And it deserves to be seen outside with people. It's a unique sort of viewing experience. It's a movie that has not just like long-held fans, but it has reached the ultimate like classic status. So like people are honking their horns, you know, we're going to need a bigger boat. The whole thing is just flashing lights and honking horns. And it's like, it was maybe my one magical experience that I'll have this summer. So if you have a drive-in near you, I can't recommend it enough. And if you're playing Jaws, absolutely go see that.
There's so many memes with the mayor now.
I was like, going to say, my favorite follow-up. We're all living there. My favorite follow-up of the mayor from Jaws is the reminder that he was still mayor in Jaws 2.
Yes.
To remember to vote.
Right.
Yeah. I have one.
Oh.
I'll go.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm excited about this because I love this movie. It's very distinctive and special. It's a first-time filmmaker. It's also one of the times recently, or one of the rare times, when I have a film that if this doesn't talk right to you, then it's like I don't know you at all. It is a Japanese film called We Are Little Zombies.
Ooh.
It is a black comedy about four tween-aged kids who are all orphaned separately, like they're not related, but they are all orphans.
Yeah.
And they decide to form a band because obviously that's how you like you use power pop to kind of get way out of your grief. It's heavily, heavily stylized. It has tons of video game references. One of the kids particularly is obsessed with like retro video games. So there's all this 8-bit stuff. There's tons of like just layers. It's, not like Scott Pilgrim as a film, but in terms of some structure or throwing things in or playing a lot with conventions. There's a ton of music performances. There's all this. Yeah, it's just, it's very wild, but also thoughtful because these characters are going through really unique things. And also they might be terrible, terrible little humans. Yeah. They are little zombies after all. So It is now streaming as of a couple days ago through virtual cinemas. So if you go to littlezombies.oscilloscope.net, it will connect you with different virtual cinemas and you can support your local cinemas by watching something through there.
Ooh.
So while I am always, you know, out endorsing DVDs and Blu-rays and physical media in general, I've also really been enjoying during this time of craziness going through the streaming services and finding titles that have been unavailable on physical media for quite some time and that are now readily available again for audiences, which I always find really exciting. And so earlier when Joelle mentioned Lesbians Over 40, I was reminded that Tubi is streaming the film Late Blue Bloomers, which is a 1996 comedy that was directed in Dallas in the 90s by the late Julia Dyer, was written by her sister Gretchen, and it is about a high school basketball coach and the woman who is like the high school secretary who is married to a man, and the two of them just suddenly embark upon this affair with no preparation for it at all. Neither of them saw it coming. Neither of them ever thought about, you know, their identity in that way, but they fall in love and what repercussions it has, you know, in this very sort of small, tight-knit Texas community. It has some really great Dallas actors in it, led by Connie Nelson and Dee Hannigan. And it's a really great queer movie that I think is unfortunately kind of it's post New Queer Cinema because it's toward the latter half of the 90s. But, you know, premiered at Sundance, Strand released it originally. It's kind of been out of circulation, so I think a lot of people have forgotten that it existed. But it is a movie about like a lesbian romance that transpires between, you know, two people who are on the other side of 40, and it's a lovely, lovely movie, and people can now finally see it for the first time in a long time on Tubi.
You tied in our two unofficial themes of today, lesbians and sports.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Boom.
Wait, Alonzo, is it TUBI or TUVI?
TUBI dot TV. It's a free with ads streaming service.
Yeah, yeah. Tubi has been coming through with the good movies. You know, I just gotta say, you know, this is the second time we've mentioned Tubi with a hit. Now, you know, originally I was going to go through, you know, Bay's Theron's, you know, a catalog and, you know, make my pick there. But, you know, as you all know, I was very angry looking through this IMDb. And then it hit me that, you know, this movie was at a time where it might be missed by some because it was a black movie. And I think people should go back and watch it because it's beautiful. It's a beautiful love story. And it brought this into our lives, that I think all black people have played at every other black wedding has this song. As a matter of fact, it was because of this movie that I thought this was a Maxwell song and not a Kate Bush song. I was like listening to Kate Bush. I'm like, why is she singing this Maxwell song? Hold on. What is this? What is this? Finally, does Maxwell know about this? Love and Basketball. It was the movie. It was when they finally, and it, I don't know. It was also like, just that it was like the payoff of the will they won't they, and then you finally see them connecting and you're like, yeah, because y'all should have been dating this whole time. And also you could tell this was in retrospect, you could tell this was directed by a woman because like the movie ends with the man knowing his place and supporting his money making wife and sitting on the sidelines with their kid. I was like, yeah, but yeah, no, that the movie is phenomenal. It's really great. And honestly, if watch it for no other reason as like one of I call one of the tent poles of black art. Like it was like a real big, like everyone I knew saw it. So like when I run into, because I remember I was in a room once and I referenced Love and Basketball and no one saw it. And I was like, this is weird. But yeah.
Children.
So yeah. So oh, no. truly great movie. Hey, before we wrap up the show, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's gone out of your way to support the show as a Max Fun member. You truly are the reason for this show and the season. So please continue your support. We can't thank you enough. We're very excited to have you on board if you're new. And thank you for being on board if you are OG veteran, okay?
And again, we get that these are, you know, tenuous times for a lot of folks financially. There are so many ways that you can support the show. As a listener, obviously, you're already doing it. But, you know, leave us that 5-star review on iTunes so that Iffy can mangle your name. You know, if you can't donate to Max Fun Drive, you can always promote Max Fun Drive on your social media. Let your friends who do have that kind of cash lying around get involved. Let them set it and forget it and start doing a monthly support of the shows. All kinds of ways that, you know, we just really appreciate when you talk about the show to other people, when you recommend us to other people, when you retweet, when you share, anything to do to sort of like amplify what's going on here at Who Shot Ya and at all the Max Fun shows, it all goes into the well, it all supports. So we thank you guys for just being so great about it.
Yes. Thanks for being in this well with us, baby Jessicas. And if you haven't had a chance to become a member yet, but are wondering if there's somewhere on the internet that you could, you can. You can do that at MaximumFun.org/join. Join us. Be a joiner.
All right. Well, Joelle, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have anything that you'd like to plug?
No, you guys can just follow me online at Joelle Monique. That's JoelleMonique. We're hanging out. We're around trying to stay awake and also go to sleep. It's been sleep cycle is not a real thing
twin
anymore.
Challenges.
It's really a problem.
Oh. Well, again, the number for the Who Shot Line is WSY803-1664. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Ya Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast. Who Shot Ya Podcast. Or send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
The kiss at the end was perfect.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.